More than 100 years ago, a Spanish philosopher, George Santayana, said, and I quote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." I think the founders of the global trading system took him at his word. They saw the merit of creating the system in part because they remembered the past so well. They remembered Congressman Hawley and Senator Smoot, whose pictures I have in my office, to remind me of who the real founders of the WTO were. And they remembered how their notorious act accelerated the protectionist spiral that led world trade to contract by two-thirds between 1929 and 1934. A system for opening trade through international rules and within the principles of non-discrimination, transparency, predictability, has provided us with an insurance policy against the kind of these policy excesses of the 1930s, and it has provided a platform for growth, for development, and for poverty alleviation around the world. Over time, as we know, GATT evolved into the WTO, and the WTO itself has evolved in ways both large and small. Our dispute settlement system, unique in the field of international conflict resolution, has contributed to peacefully resolving trade differences. The Aid for Trade program, which we launched in 2005, has mobilized more than $200 billion since. The organization's monitoring and surveillance capacity has helped to keep protectionists in check during this crisis. And in many ways, the WTO has become the place you think about when the topic is trade. Increasingly, this organization is seen as the center of intellectual leadership on trade, and our work on global value chains or value-added trade has set the tone for the global debate. Now, Craig has done us a great service by researching and writing this book. We have commissioned the book, but we have given Craig absolute academic freedom to pursue the fact that constitute the threads in the tapestry of the WTO history with a small H, of course. He has carefully documented the events that have contributed to the WTO's transformation from an organization to an institution which commands center stage in the field of trade. He has chronicled our successes, our setbacks, from the corridors of the Center William Rappard to the streets of Seattle. He has delved into the details of the Swiss formula, dispute settlement, decision-making in WTO, but he also explains clearly the case for trade and the value of our organization. Craig has also usefully pointed at how the organization may evolve in the future. I know, Craig, that you've put many hours of work, long sleepless nights to produce this book, and I also know that Alejandro Jara has shared many of these moments with you, and my thanks go to both of you. Trade has changed a great deal in the past 10 years. Today, the pattern of trade, the actors involved with trade, and the obstacle to trade are very different from what they were a decade ago. Global value chains have profoundly changed the way we trade, where before we traded in goods, we now trade in tasks. The fact that goods are increasingly made in the world rather than in any single country means we need to measure trade in value-added rather than gross terms if we want to properly understand how global value chains contribute to local economies and to help us devise more effective, more realistic trade policies. Actors of trade have changed. In 1980, China had 1% of the world exports. 10 years later, the share was 11%. Sorry, 20 years later. During that same time, Korea has more than tripled its shares of global export. Mexico has doubled its share. For the first time in history, the South is responsible for more than half of the world economic activity and more than half of world's exports. South-South trade is roughly now one-fourth of world trade, double what it was in 2000. Moreover, the emergence of powerful countries like China, of course, Brazil, India, Mexico, Indonesia, and others, has altered the dynamics of multilateral negotiations in trade, certainly, but elsewhere too, including in climate change negotiations. These large and rapidly growing economies have also changed the way we think about developing countries. Are they rich countries with many poor people, or poor countries with many rich people? In the past, trade negotiations were in many ways simpler. Between rich countries, reciprocity was the template for negotiations, while the main theme for poor countries was flexibility. Today, these lines are blurred, and emerging countries have taken on greater commitments than ever before. And finally, the barriers which we encounter in trade today are very different from your standard tariff, the measure of choice for centuries because of its effectiveness in protecting producers. When one talks to business today, you quickly learn that tariffs are not the problem they find the most onerous. Rather, they say that the difficulty is in non-tariff measures. Today, the barriers that exporters encounter are more likely to be of a regulatory nature, pertaining to car emissions, bank regulations, product and food safety standards, or customs procedures, measures the purpose of which is not, or not mainly, to protect the producer, but to protect the consumer. Now, while we can never predict anything with complete certainty, we are confident that these trends will continue into the future. As Santa Yana suggests, when charting a course for the future, history is among our best books. Examination of the way that trade has changed in the last decades offers clues that can make navigating the future more manageable. And in this respect, the WTO World Trade Report edition 2013 can be read as a sort of a postface to Craig's book. But as we know, history is a compass, not a roadmap nor a GPS. It tells us what routes have been successful, thoroughfares, and which have been cul-de-sac. But it won't identify every sharp turn or every bump in the road. We cannot foretell every economic shock or the impact of the next technological breakthrough, but we know there will be future economic turbulence, and we know that tomorrow's technological innovations will shape the trading environment of the future, just as computer tablets, mobile telephony, and satellite navigation influence the patterns of trade today. So this history and future of the World Trade Organization is a reference, one I hope you will find valuable. It is also the book of a record of the relatively short but immensely full life of the WTO. Even more than this, by providing a reflection on what has been this book, may well guide us on what will be. And this way, I believe, we will be able to keep making history. And it's at this minute that Roberto Azevedo comes in. Extremely well-timed, Roberto, as usual. Let me, in closing, thank Fuchs Seng, who will moderate this session, and also the panelists. As Fuchs Seng just said, they have been actors of the WTO history as General Council chairs. And we thought that the best way to test Craig's book would be to hear from the horse's mouth. So, Celso, Fred, Carol, Stuart, thanks a lot for being with us today. Finally, a short commercial. The book is on sale at the WTO bookshop, and it will be available for download at our website very shortly. Spanish, French translations are also in preparation. Thanks for your attention.